The futurology show digs into the tech, the trends and digital transformations that are happening and will change how we live, work and engage as people and as businesses.
Futurology. Hi, welcome to Futurology Show right here on Cliff Central. We recently attended the Singularity U Summit in Johannesburg and had the privilege of interviewing many amazing people with a view of the future around things like disruption and exponential technology. While we prepare the episodes from Singularity U, here's an episode from our Vault of Awesome for you to enjoy. We spent time with Mr. Brett Loebscher of WeChat discussing the book Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari. Enjoy!
This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Futurology, everybody. My name's Brett Sinclair. Yes, the African digital disruptor and squirrel rocker is back. We're really excited today. One of our guests today is an absolute superstar. He's been on our show a number of times, but before I get to him, I wanted to say hello to my dear friend, Brett.
Hey, Brett.
How you doing, Brett?
Oh, I can't complain, Brett.
I think this is a good time to introduce Brett.
Yes, hey, Brett.
Hey, Brett.
Mr. Brett Loebscher.
Brett's.
Brett's
three Brett's.
Yeah, it sounds like a joke.
Sounds ridiculous.
Three Brett's in a sound room.
Yeah, three Brett's walk into a sound room.
I was going to say like a bar, and yeah. We all go, ow.
Okay.
I don't want to be a part of this joke anymore.
I'm immediately not liking this. This got really old really fast.
Well, at least Mike's got his top on because Mike is not here today.
No, and we had a show recently where it was just Mike and I, and I must say it was very focused.
So just the two of you spoke to each other. So you were having a meeting and you threw some mics in.
No, we had
just one mic.
We had the guys talking about the physical reboot.
Oh, yes.
And yeah, it was great. I mean, it was.
So that was an ABSA store, hey?
Yes,
it was. How freaking cool is that?
And 4.5 hours, they flipped an entire store using the Agile methodologies within a physical space. And everybody's like, how on earth did you do that?
And did you see the amount of games that they had? They had a bunch of foosballs and, I mean, very cool.
You can take a selfie in the bank because the bank is cool enough to take selfies in.
But and then you get arrested as you walk out, right?
Why? Because you took a photo in the bank.
Exactly.
You guys got to get over that kind of stuff, man.
Yeah.
That's so lame.
So I'm really excited today, right? We're going to talk about us.
Us?
Yes.
Brits or just humans?
Just humans. Sapiens. Sapiens. So topic tonight is a future of sapiens. We got Brett in because he's, you know, that kind of guy. He's absolutely passionate
about
humans.
You qualify because you're a sapien.
You're a sapien.
Yeah, well, what he's trying to say subtly is that I'm a nerd.
Exactly.
I knew it. I knew it was going to come up.
It is. It always is. Mm. And you know why I say it? He's got an implant, but he's not willing to tell us where.
I do not have an implant. And even if I did have, I would most certainly not tell you where.
Well, at this point, I need to ask the guest if he'd like to reboot.
There's only one reason I don't actually have an implant. It's because I can't afford one at this point. But I'm working my way toward it. I'm first in line.
So John Thomas isn't an implant?
No, that's a family friend. How do you know him?
Not that familiar with him.
I'll see you. I would assume not.
Anyway, so that's a good start. I'm really impressed, guys.
Should we do a safety start just to be safe?
Should we do a safety start? Yeah. Nah.
Nah, okay.
Thank God. I thought for a second you said the safety dance. I can't remember the words. That was
in
the
80s. Who can dance?
If you want to.
That's really the safety.
Okay, now we should do a safety start.
100% agree.
Okay, well, that was 3 minutes of your life that you're never going to get back. But thank you for listening to the Futurology Show. If you are listening, there are other shows that you can listen to. If the first 3 minutes of this one hasn't grabbed your attention yet, just give us some time because it is going to go somewhere. We are talking Future of Sapiens with Mr. Brett Loebscher. But yeah, the podcasts are alive and well. They're all still online. So if you want to go check them on iTunes, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating. And you can tweet us.
Oh, he's going to say it, say it,
at
say
Futurology
it.
Show. Ah, and whatever hashtag religion. You feel grabs your attention once you've got with the characters you have left after you've said at Futurology Show.
Yeah. So that usually ends up just being a thumbs up.
Yay!
We got criticized by Brett Comal saying, guys, you take
the virtual
more space
comedian.
In actually typing hashtag the Futurology Show. Yeah. Sorry,
we should have been cool like all those tech companies that just like take all the vowels out.
Mm. So I think we should do something like
Futurology.
But I thought Twitter was working on this. I think they're going to stop counting the at handle as part of the character limit.
Did you hear what he just said? Did you hear what Mr. Brett Loebscher just said? He said at handle. My man, high five. What's an at handle, Brett Sinclair?
So do you say at handle Futurology Show, or do you say at
It is an at handle, correct?
I have no idea, and I can't believe I've taken sides this early on in the podcast. So, even
yeah, we just I just high-fived. No, go back a few podcasts.
I just want to know what he does. Do you do anything to do with chat or social at all in this business?
I do, yeah. I've dabbled.
Dabbled.
Apparently, you can't call it a hashtag, and you can't say at handle, and you can't
at handle. It's
can't
at.
Say on the line. I mean, come on, guys, where are we at?
Are you going to take like this photo and put it on the line?
This is going to be forever. This is never going to go away.
It's never going to go away.
Okay.
Anyway,
inside
hashtag
jokes.
What Mike said.
Oh, it seems he's not here.
Nah.
It's always Future of Sapiens.
Future of Sapiens.
I think we need to go back to go forward, though. Mm. I mean, in this story, anyway. I mean, we've gone from sapiens, and I'm just going to jump into this, but sapiens and caves, being able to tell stories.
Is that where they got the drawings from, right?
Well, that's where emojis come from, isn't it?
Like in Lone Hill.
Rhone Hill?
Rhone Hill. Just next to the Virgin Gym. There's a bunch of paintings there.
Yes, apparently. We don't know how old they are, really.
It's probably a bunch of kids.
It's still a story.
It's pretty cool, though. So, you are passionate about Sapiens, right? The book. And
yes.
I can never ever say the author's name.
Noah Yuval Harari.
What a flippin' legend. I watched one of his TED shows the other day. It inspired me to get the audiobook.
It's fantastic.
So I'm on chapter 4, and I'm just blown away.
I've been pushing everyone in my team to read this book. I think it's, for me personally anyway, probably the most important book I've read in the last 10 years.
Okay, so give us some details. I know it's all about stories so far. It's about how we differentiate from all the other homos. That does sound kind of bad.
Hominids.
Hominids. That's the word I want. You see, you are a nerd, Brett.
I admit.
I knew I was going to learn words today. Oh, I was so excited. So all the other hominids. Big word for
Makes
me.
Makes it better.
Makes it better.
Or that little nid at the end.
Nid. But also, it should be an honor, right? Like everyone goes, homos, that's a bad thing. But actually, that's human, right?
Yeah.
The term homo is human.
That's the thing. Sapien I think is, a lot of people don't. Well, it was something that was highlighted to me in this book, that the groups of hominids were actually in competition.
Oh, yes, that's right.
In the way that others.
Because it's not an actual evolution, right?
Right.
They're running in parallel.
Yeah. So we, you know, we talk about Homo erectus and Homo sapiens, which is us,
the
species that won out.
You know what you just said? It's penetration.
But then also,
what was the penetration of the Homo erectus?
But then also the Neanderthals. I'm completely going to ignore
that. I think so. You and I can have a conversation.
No, we're not going to get
As long
anywhere.
As there's two out of three Brits paying attention, we should be okay.
I thought you'd just been on media training. You should be able to handle this. You can't just ignore me.
It's not supposed to waterboard the guest.
So we won out over the other hominids because of what we were able to do. And the core of it is really what you were referring to now, which is our ability to use stories to mobilize us in larger and larger groups. That's the key to kind of everything.
Because they said that the groups were kind of restricted to about 120, 150 is the most people or hominoids that could fit into a group because they weren't able to share a story. Now, that doesn't make sense, right, until you read the book because I can tell you a story. Why would that expand my reach the communities?
It's slightly different. So this is actually referred to as the Dunbar number. And what it is a number that is meant to quantify the number of social connections any human being can have in their brain and keep the relationship meaningful. So in other words, know something about the person. And it turns out that number is almost hard.
27,433.
No, around.
Damn it. That's my LinkedIn number.
That's close.
So I don't know them that well.
You are using LinkedIn wrong. Just 100% not understanding how that product works.
Nope. So what is the actual number?
Around 150.
150, okay.
And the way this – I can't remember the scientist's first name, but his last name is Dunbar. And the way he came about understanding that this number was some kind of limitation, and you can see it happening in nature, but also with tribal human societies that are found in kind of the Amazon and so on, is generally when the tribe reaches a size of around 120, 150 max people – it will split off in another tribal form because the social structure starts to break down.
Okay.
So we have kind of a physical limitation in terms of how our brain helps us to work together as a tribe. but our storytelling ability has superseded that. And it's the reason we're able to, even if we were fighting 150 Neanderthals that were twice as strong as each of us, we could mobilize 5,000 people around an idea.
Hence things like religion.
Right, exactly.
So you're kind of giving someone to believe in it. And I remember one of the examples he gives, he says, you know, we always try to compare it back to monkeys, right? Mm. And a monkey will, it'll see the opportunity to grab a banana and it'll learn to communicate to say, hey, there's a lion, run, and everyone will run. But in the sapiens, you'll be able to say, listen, there are a bunch of bananas that are sitting in heaven, and it's unlimited amount of bananas, and it's incredible.
So don't steal the one you have in front of you now.
Don't steal the one in front of you. Wait, because you've got this amazing, and it's a big
story.
Or
share the one you have in front of you with everybody else.
Correct. So you're telling a story. But if you're a monkey, you're going to sit there and go, yeah, I'm not going to believe that. Yet as sapiens, we start to believe these stories, and these stories are so in-depth and detailed that I think he even started talking about corporations.
Well, this is the thing. If you really, really are able to take a big step back, and it's part of the reason I love this book so much, is the book helps you see very clearly that almost all of human society is based on fake structures now. Mm. The things that we take for granted, like a corporation, it's treated legally like another human being, but it doesn't exist in the real world.
An entity.
If I ask you, what is Toyota?
It's a car.
It's a combination of the cars and
the people and that logo. And
it's all of that stuff together, but is it something real in and of itself?
Yeah, the actual entity is nothing. It's a piece of paper.
But it is to us because
we've associated
that. And it goes from corporations right through to everything. And the part that I loved most of all, because we've been working on mobile fintech products of late, is the idea of money.
I mean, because that's all made up, right?
Here's the bottom line. Money has value because we all agree it does.
Trust.
And that is the core of why we are so successful as a species, because we can give credence to these esoteric ideas that help us innovate and move forward as a team together.
Just a side thought then on the financial side of it. I mean, Bitcoin at the moment, I reckon the hyperinflated rate of growth of Bitcoin is due to sentiment. The fact that more humans are buying Bitcoin and are therefore talking about how I bought Bitcoin. Have you got Bitcoin?
Yep.
Therefore, more people buy Bitcoin. And because of that sentiment, everybody's buying it. That's why financial brokers don't trust it, because it's all based on...
Ironically, that is what everything is based on. It's just a matter of, can you achieve critical mass or not? If you achieve critical mass...
So more than 150 people start buying and it works.
No.
You can buy one tribe.
I think from a market point of view, critical mass is a different story.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
I mean, here we're talking in millions of people because, you know, market dynamics are now understood at a global level.
Okay.
So it's very different in that context, I suppose. But once it reaches a certain sort of tipping point and it becomes real enough so that it's not going to go away, then it will stay.
Okay.
The risk that we sit with in the short term is... it is possible that it won't reach the tipping point and then it will pop like the biggest bubble.
Yeah, it just falls apart, which is what I keep telling everybody with Bitcoin. Enjoy it while you've got it. Try not to have any knee-jerk reaction. Mm.
Look, I think whether Bitcoin itself...
Sorry, I didn't want to talk about Bitcoin the whole time, but it was an interesting thing, yeah.
Yeah, whether it survives or not is unknown to all of us. But I think the principles upon which it's based, the blockchain stuff, it's absolutely the future.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. No, it's amazing. That DLT stuff is great. The... has digital, we've probably got some questions to follow a proper path rather than philosophizing all the time, but has digital not expanded the size of a tribe?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's happened to us as individuals.
The communities, right?
Because, I mean, I've got more than 150 friends on Facebook. I'd like to think I know most of them, more than 150.
This is the thing, you know. So part of the future of where humanity is going to go is this the idea of becoming a cyborg, where you are using technology that is implanted in your body to augment your capabilities. The deep irony of it is we're all already cyborgs. Just because our cell phones aren't embedded in our bodies doesn't mean we're not using technology
the whole time, right?
To augment our brain's capability.
Yeah.
So, and that's exactly what you've just described.
Yeah. Okay.
You have more friends on your social networks than your brain can cope with, but because it helps you remember...
I've enhanced my brain with my device.
Exactly right.
Yeah. But we're still analog, according to Elon Musk, because of our thumbs, right?
I don't know about the thumb story.
Have you heard what he said? So he's going, you know, he's not too worried about the AI side of things.
Oh, the speed of communication.
Because of the speed of communication, right?
Yes.
Your input is all HD, but your output is analog.
Yeah.
So until we've solved that problem, the singularity point is still quite a way off. I mean, what I'd love to see is that we start setting up thumb speed gaming competitions.
Thumb Wars, they did that. Vodacom did Thumb Wars a couple of years ago.
But it wasn't about going as fast as you could. Try to turn your thumbs into HD, right? I don't know. I feel like the intellect is looking at me and going, geez, why am I on the show?
But we've had... I was like, dude, come on.
Come on, I want to say...
Evolve already, bro. Right?
You're
come
still
on.
Just going...
But we had Wayne Bishop on here a while back talking about the future of media. And there was one of the discussion points went into like, how are we going to have nanobots injected into us that's going to know things and interact with devices around us that'll tell us when we need to go get medicine because our temperature spiked and we're about to have a fever or something. Mm. But
I tell you what, I'd have to get to know each nanobot.
Buy me a drink first before I get an implant.
Exactly.
You can't. If you only have 150 nanobots, it's not going to work.
Your tribe's a bit flat, bro. Yeah. Sorry. No, but I mean, we're going to have these things that will actually communicate digitally in the future. I'm not saying it's fact, but it's a good philosophy.
Well, this stuff is based on the work of Reiko as well.
Yes, and he's made some great predictions lately as well.
Right. I mean, so all he does really is extrapolate the pace of technological change, assuming that the exponential growth curves that we see repeated over and over in every single technology domain are going to consistently continue. And he's extrapolating it out to the future and saying, you know, by X year, we will have computers that are so small that they're microscopic and they will be able to communicate wirelessly. And so why not inject them into your body? I mean, if you think about the health benefits of that, knowing 20 minutes before you're going to have a heart attack that you're going to have a heart attack and getting yourself to the hospital, who wouldn't want that?
And then Waze wakes up and says, hey, bro, you've got 20 minutes to get to the hospital. This is the route you should take.
Countdown is on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Are you in traffic? We've noticed that you aren't moving.
Oh, it'll be like that Stoppio Luisi thing on TV. Do you remember where you got Scott chasing
Scott. And then because it's
on a helicopter. Who's the lady?
While you're trying to get to the hospital.
Yeah, that blonde lady.
Melanie.
That
was a good show. Well, they should bring that show back.
They should bring it. Like,
didn't she have a backpack with a big antenna on the back?
Yes, that's right.
It was amazing.
Pre-cell phones. Now it would just be a guy running around with a cell phone, I guess.
Or nanobots.
Sure.
The power of positive thought is getting me forward.
Yes.
But I mean, because it's contextually aware in the future, we're going to know that we're 20 minutes away from having a heart attack. Mm. We're going to be in the car on the way there, or the Uber will just arrive and it'll have a red light on it.
Surely the nanobots.
And on the way there, we're getting given insurance, life insurance, and funeral cover. The last minute of your life will actually not be your life flashing before your eyes. It'll be
a bunch of transactions.
Joking aside, this is part of the whole quantified self movement. And we've already started the first steps of this. This is why people are publishing their Strava cycling route every time they go out on a bicycle. This is why people are monitoring what their sleep is like with their wearable watch or whatever. We've already started this.
Yeah.
So all it is the next two or three steps, and before you know it, you've got really meaningful data coming back saying, you know, whatever it is you ate half an hour ago, it's really messing with your system. You should probably avoid that in future. You know, and it sounds like this really ridiculous, wild thing, but we're on the path already. It's inevitable that we end up there.
Now, have you ever had to piss out one of these nanobots?
That was a proper...
Yeah, but if you ever had to piss out one of these nanobots, I'm pretty sure that would be a whole new problem that medical science would
I don't think it's that big. It's not like you're going to give birth to a bunch of nanobots.
No, but these are the
nanobots.
Thoughts. I'm playing dumb here, but like these are the thoughts of the layman. They're like,
I've had kidney stones twice.
Yeah.
I fear nothing from the nanobots. Bring it on.
Bring it on.
No, like,
claw your way through my urethra. Blood is temporary.
The way Kurzweil talks about this stuff is that these bots will actually be the size of red blood cells. You're not even going to notice.
Awesome.
That's quite scary.
And how many would we need? Don't say 150.
Probably billions.
Billions?
Wow. They would be throughout your blood system. That's the thinking anyway.
So we've got, 8 liters or 8 pints of blood in our body.
Yeah.
Are we going to substitute 1 pint of that with potential nanobots, making us pretty much cyborg?
I do not know. I think we're getting into the weeds here. I don't know.
No, but I mean, let's explore the future. We don't need to get it right. That's the wonderful thing about studying the future. We can kind of take learnings and things and make a few assumptions.
But I mean, the idea is that these things could physically always repair
live.
Stuff.
They could always live in your body, right?
Yes. Make they copies could. Of themselves.
And they don't sleep. Imagine if you could background process with the nanobots that are inside your body. So while you are sleeping, you are still actively thinking about things that will be delivered to you when you wake up.
You could write a document.
Yeah. No, you just say, okay, nanobots, this is the brief. Contextualize and extrapolate. And then in the morning, you wake up and be like, yeah, that was pretty clever. I know Kung Fu.
Well, that's very interesting because
you've torn up your bed, though.
Your wife's probably
beaten.
Your wife's missing because the Uber arrived at 2 o'clock in the morning after you slapped her in the throat. No, sorry, but that's
anyway,
okay. Sidetracked. Let's bring it back.
To what?
Where were we? Well, we were in caves at one point.
He was playing.
Yeah. We actually lost track of the sapiens part.
No, actually, let's bring it back to there. I'd like to actually push that a little bit further on how that story. Do you guys know Justin Cohen? He came into the office the other day. He does a big show around story and the psychology of the story and how it affects different parts of your mind.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't know if he's actually read Sapien because I met him before I read The Sapiens. And I found it fascinating that everyone's starting to realize, A, the power of the story from a persuasion, i.e. sales, or from generating the culture within an organization.
And demanding attention due to relevance.
Wow. Yes. Like,
because
exactly
you can tell as many stories as you want, but if the audience you're telling it to is like, I don't care.
They don't care.
Done.
The key with effective storytelling is engaging emotionally. This is why stories work. Because why we remember them.
Yeah. Stories worth sharing. I think
I love stories though. I love telling stories.
But I think that's why the TED Talks and stuff, all those kinds of things start to work so well, is because they're real people talking about real challenges that other people are experiencing. So immediately you've hit on the, whether it be the heartstrings or the intellectual strings of the people listening.
But there's a downside to this, right?
There's a story.
So think about the stories like fashion magazines. Mm-hmm. Those are stories that are also fake, right? Because all the women in there are basically photoshopped and you've got a bunch of young girls who are watching all of this and the women's psyche are being affected to the point where we're starting to see things like plastic surgery. I mean, is that not us artificially changing ourselves based on stories? And I'd love to see how far artificial kind of surgery will take, right? Because maybe in the future you could pick what you want to look like.
Well, you almost certainly will be able to do that.
Face off.
Foundations for the technology that would be required to do that are already in place.
Mm-hmm. So, what, on the face off styled kind of thinking?
Well, genetic modification using the CRISPR.
Oh, yes, CRISPR. Technology. What do you know about CRISPR?
So the short version of what CRISPR is it's a technology that was discovered in which proteins, a specific protein called the Cas9 protein.
Yeah.
So you'll see whenever people talk about CRISPR, the acronym is horrible. I can't remember it. It's something redundant, interspersed. It's the worst acronym.
But it even sounds terrible, like you're going to crisp yourself.
So what it is CRISPR is the technology and Cas9 is the protein. What this protein is good at is taking DNA, isolating a very specific strand of DNA, cutting it out and then replacing it with another piece of DNA. And the reason that this protein exists in our bodies naturally is it is a way for our bodies to identify virus DNA. And the way it's worked in the past is when your body has fought off a specific virus and it understands what the code in the DNA looks like, it injects this into your own body's DNA so that it can identify that virus when it comes in again and attack it in the right way. So send the right types of antibodies to take it out. So the interesting thing with what the CRISPR technology does is it gives us the ability to swap out pieces of DNA code at will. With extreme precision.
Like literally cutting with a bunch of scissors.
So the idea of having
DNA
a
level.
Designer baby where you say, this baby is going to be 6'2", blue eyes, brown hair,
muscular, fast twitch muscle fibers. We know which parts of our DNA code actually cause those outcomes. You could manufacture a human being to become something beforehand.
There's a sequence that I'm missing in the DNA kind of conversation with this, CRISPR, is that we manipulate a DNA strand. Surely our entire bodies are made of billions and billions and billions of these DNA strands, right?
Yes.
How does it replicate?
Your cells are making copies of themselves all the time. So you have to – look, I mean, this is why most of the technology that's being spoken about now is at the fetus level.
Yeah.
Because then if you modify the DNA with a handful of cells, so dozens of cells instead of the trillions that make up our bodies, you can actually manipulate the outcome far more simply. But it is possible to actually change the DNA inside your cells and have the future versions of those cells, the copies of those cells that are made, carry the new code.
So then stem cell research, is that kind of going to support the acceleration of what CRISPR and the DNA stuff's doing? Like, I know stem cell research goes a long way for autism, but they seem to take it out of one area and put it in another area. How much do you know about that? Are those two kind of tying together, or is this a completely different field of technology?
It is a different field. I mean, they are linked in that, you know, stem cells still carry your DNA. But what stem cells are, that it's a specific type of cell that a fetus is made up of. So there's a very specific point in the development of a fetus where cells start changing from stem cells into other types of cells, whether it's heart cells or muscle cells or eye cells.
So that's the whole idea of growing things, replacing things, right? Rather than tweaking the DNA strand.
So this stem cell therapy is particularly interesting, and this has a huge impact on the future of sapiens and what we will be able to do as humans, because with stem cell research now, we've figured out how to take cells, so they could take a scraping of your skin and then revert them back into stem cells. These are called pluripotent stem cells. So they can actually cause them to become stem cells and then provoke them into becoming another type of cell. So they could take...
You're kidding me.
No, this is already...
So it really doesn't matter what type of... You can build a liver just because you've got that stem cell capability.
And in fact, they have done this.
Oh my God.
So what they do is they make a biodegradable scaffolding in the shape of a liver. Yeah. They take skin cells off of a person, revert them back into stem cells, push them into becoming liver cells, and then they grow it in a nutrient bath around the scaffolding, and they grow you a new liver. So this stuff has not been done in humans, but it has been done in lab animals as test, and the science is there. So the beautiful thing about this is you end up with a liver, and recently they've done a human heart. They grew a human heart that they could start up and continue beating. You could have a transplant of an organ that is you. There is no rejection of it.
Yeah,
it gets rid of all of that. The other thing that they're doing with stem cells that's absolutely fascinating is stem cells can be caused to regrow neural tissue, which is the big...
The Alzheimer's problem, right? Which is
that's in the brain.
Tissue.
But I mean, if you think about someone who has a spinal injury and ends up as a quadriplegic or a...
Repair it.
You can repair it. It's possible. And then what they've seen with tests done with lab rats and so on is the nerve endings regrow, but the wiring is wrong. So when a rat's trying to move its left foot, for example, its right thigh will kick up or whatever. But what happens is the brain is extremely plastic. The word they use is plastic, which means it's able to reconstruct the way it processes information extremely effectively. So it takes the rat days to start to learn how to walk again, and within a few weeks it's walking.
See, I mean, I've got a theory around the workings of the brain in quantum science, right?
Oh, yeah?
So, like, again, it's you know, that crazy way out, putting out good karma and all that kind of stuff. There's a whole lot of stuff that we really don't understand what's going on in our brain. And if we're able to rewire our brains, and then I think about what we're doing with quantum computing, those two worlds are very different worlds. But when you start mashing them together, maybe the brain is actually a quantum computer.
There's a field of science that's starting to explore these ideas that, you know, there are quantum effects that happen at the cellular level that have a huge impact on how our biology and how our world actually functions. But this is very much emergent research, as far as I understand.
I mean, like, who were we talking to? Brett Comal. I mean, he's been reading also another book, can't remember what it was about, but essentially what we know now as humanity is literally only a couple of percentage points of what's actually out there. And you think about what we actually know. So we started talking about CERN and the research that's been done there. And just from understanding how dark matter is formed, what that opens from a potential of a different field of research and knowledge,
yes,
that we just have no idea about.
Yes.
So I've got a question, which has been kind of nagging at me as we start thinking about stem cells and we can start building them, and maybe we use CRISPR to start shaping our DNAs to get the right kind of stuff that we want. It feels like we could be a computer.
We effectively are. That's what DNA is. It's code. We are biological machines, and the DNA is the code that tells the machine how to work.
And our brain's the storage. But what made me think about it is it's the work that they're doing in actually storing electronic storage in your DNA. So things like files and...
It's a different thing.
But, I mean, surely the two could mash up somewhere along the
line. No,
lines.
I mean, the way to understand it is that a strand of DNA is literally biological code. It's 100% biological code. So the last time I was on, we briefly sort of touched on this, the idea that DNA, which is that double helix shape, it looks like a stepladder that's been twisted. The base pairs are the two rungs of the ladder that meet in the middle, and there's only four types of molecules that make up your entire DNA.
And code is only two characters, yeah, right? So you think about the
so human code is binary. Computer science stuff is binary.
Okay.
The code of our DNA is quadratic, I guess. I don't know.
And quantum computing is threefold, right? Three different. There's a zero, a one, and something in between.
And a both.
Yes.
It's different. So it's not. So DNA is still binary in nature because there's four states that it can be. The thing that makes quantum computing so unique and interesting and so difficult to get your head around is the state can be one or the other, or both simultaneously.
Yes, that's right.
That's where the mathematical weirdness comes in. And this is the stuff that happens at the quantum level, which we don't really understand yet, but it has these effects which make it extremely difficult to kind of figure out how our universe actually is held together. But, you know, the interesting thing for me is, I think it was a quote by Isaac Newton talking about when somebody was talking about the amazing achievements that he'd had uncovered. He said that he did it only because he was able to stand on the shoulders of giants. And this is how science works, is you use discoveries to stand on top of in order to discover new stuff.
Which, again,
I love that. I love it.
Just brilliant, because I think of Ray Kurzweil's law of acceleration. And he talks about software in the same way, where he's like, well, use the latest tools, the best tools in the market to build even better tools. And a very profound statement. We're all like, wow, you're a legend. But actually, this is a concept that we've been working on as humanity forever, for ages,
of
right?
Of course it is. I mean, you go back to the sapiens story that we're talking about. The physiological difference between you and I and a Homo sapiens from 80,000 years ago is effectively zero. We're the same. We haven't changed. 80,000 years on the evolutionary scale is nothing at all.
That's half the time we've been on the planet, essentially. They say that we've been on the planet as Homo sapiens for about 200,000 years.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, you think about that in the context of scientific advancement and the fact that we're able to send people into space, man walking on the moon, and speak through these microphones which are connected via electrical signals that allow people on the other side of the
and
world.
And are ultimately reaching somebody through the air.
No,
and
no, it's Brett, all, Brett, we're not.
This we're is, not.
No one knows there's microphones here.
Is this fake?
This is futurology.
My nanobots are making
we're
this
just
work.
Having a normal...
And you made me wear this outfit for nothing.
No one can see.
At least he's not wearing a pink jersey.
Yeah.
Justin could see. Twice, three times, four times.
A lady.
Maybe it's just a very comfortable jersey.
It was. It did look pretty good.
Yeah.
He looked even more comfortable in your top.
Yes. Well, snug.
Snug.
And sorry, we haven't reached this clothes swapping part of the show yet, obviously.
No. Is that a thing? Can we do that?
Well, shall we play the tunes?
Question.
We're running
so
out of time.
So you have nanobots. Time is just a thing. It's just an essence, like a corporation or a tribe.
Story, yeah.
But say we have nanobots. I mean, I share apps with people. Maybe I have really intellectual nanobots, or like Lance Armstrong
is taking
his blood. I'm really fascinated.
You're fascinated over nanobots, right?
No, it's this idea of being able to do something more than just communicate. You can take out experiences from me. Let's say, I mean, who knows what these things can actually do in the future, but take some of my blood, we transfuse, if it's safe enough. But you're after my nanobots more than my blood. And then, without me having to tell you the last 10 years of my life, you just know.
Wow.
You wouldn't have to transfuse blood. I mean, the idea with...
which is high five. High fives really start to mean something.
No, you wouldn't even have to. I mean, the first steps toward this is the Neuralink company that... Elon Musk is working on now, the CEO of.
Trying to get past the analog output, right?
And the idea here is, from an information perspective, you want to know something about another person. At the moment, you've got this analog problem, which you described earlier.
I have to sit and talk
you've
to you.
You've got to type, yes, I will see you at noon. Send.
I will see you best at poon.
Yes.
Brett.
Damn you, autocorrect.
Yes. Exactly.
No more autocorrect. Everything else is solved.
So the idea with a neural lace, which is this like a net, literally a very fine net that sits over your brain and helps a computer on the outside understand the signals that are coming from your brain, and the two bits will start learning together. So your brain will start understanding how to use the technology, and the technology will start understanding how to understand your brain. Those two things will work in concert to deliver information from your brain to the internet. So the idea of a blood transfusion would be completely unnecessary.
Because we would be doing it virtually.
You'd just be able to let me know what you want me to know, and I would know it.
Wow.
Actually, that's a
mind blow. But then we would.
It would help me so much with my wife.
But then we wouldn't be doing podcasts, because all we do is be like, I really think I need to listen to the Futurology Show. And then all of a sudden we'd be served to the Futurology Show. With all of its inane nonsense that we sometimes bring to it.
Oh, but it'll probably be filtered there.
The stuff that I like, I obsess over with this, is trying to figure out what the social and philosophical impacts of this is. Because, you know, and it's very easy to drop into Borg jokes here, a single hive mind kind of thing. Yeah. But if people have the ability to communicate at the speed that their brain works,
telepathetically.
It is that. It's telepathy.
Synthetic telepathy.
And then when you add 3-4 people into the mix, then how would that influence or impact our humanity? And these are
at least amazing. The telcos will get a buy-in in the industry again.
Yeah. Good point. Well, I'm just picturing a whole lot of likes. Like. So, like.
You guys should watch Black Mirror.
Really? Oh, I have. Wow. Is it good? Mind blowing. Yeah.
Really.
Okay.
Black Mirror. It explores all of the consequences of these kinds of ideas.
Yes.
That's great.
It's brilliant. Fabulous.
So the book we're talking about is the future.
It's a TV series.
No, the book is Future of Sapiens. And then
Black Mirror is a TV series.
Yes.
It's each episode is an individual kind of sci-fi dystopian view of the future and the technology that
we have. Would social networks take us, for instance?
Oh, wow.
It just blows your brain away.
It's really amazing.
Black Mirror. Yeah.
And then that book is called A Brief History of Human Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. So that's
cool.
That's looking at how we got to here. And then
the Homo Deus.
That's his follow-up book, which is what the next 1,000 years or whatever is going to look like for humanity.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Now, there was a discussion about AI being the – and we're going to have a chat with some guys from Intellect about AI and all that. But there's discussions around – AI being the last thing that humans ever need to invent. Because from there on, go for it, AI.
We don't have to invent anymore.
But now, so that kind of separates us, and that's where we start fun discussions around automation and UBI and what is our role in the world as humans. And it kind of lends itself to a lot of utopian discussion. Like, we get a lot of time off. And should robots be taxed? Because hell.
They're taking my job.
Yeah, they're taking my job. And somebody needs to pay for UBI. But if you're going to have nanobots, I'm getting stuck on nanobots. I'm sorry, guys. But you're going to have nanobots.
It's okay.
No, but you have nanobots.
You're never
going to
live it down.
No.
You're never going to live it
down.
That's
awesome.
From now on, I'm always going to ask you, how are your nanobots?
The smaller, the better. But AI plus nanobots inside us with their own AI, who controls the robots, or then the robots controlling the humans? So the singularity, but now we're talking about the Skynet vibe.
Let's go there. Yeah, whichever way this plays out, whether it's nanobots that are working together and are in communication with external computing that helps enhance you, or we upload our consciousness into a robot of our own, which gives us the thing, whichever way
the ability
it comes
to do
out.
More, right?
The point is that the frameworks for the technologies that would enable that stuff are now here. So
that's kind of the scariest thing as well, is that we keep looking for the future, but like it's now, people.
It is now.
The future is now, right?
Yeah. So now is a perfect time to talk about this concept of the singularity. Yes. So it's actually a word that comes from astronomy, and it refers to either the starting point of the universe, which started as a singularity, which is a mathematical point in space, but it's also spoken about as being the heart of a black hole. And the reason it got transported into sci-fi thinking by this author called Werner, I don't know how you pronounce his surname, actually.
Yeah, try it. It'll be funny.
Vinge, V-I-N-G-E.
Minge.
Wenger.
So he came up with this idea of the technological singularity based on the idea that there's a certain radius when you get close to a black hole where all information stops coming out. So you can't see what's going to happen anymore. But it was actually erroneously done because that's the event horizon.
It's gravity, time, light, everything just
pulls all together.
Yeah. So when you reach the event horizon of a black hole, no more information can come out. So the gravitational pull is so strong that even light is pulled back. So the idea with the technological singularity is that whatever predictions we have now will reach a point where the speed of acceleration of technology goes vertical.
Yeah, because of that exponential curve. Yeah.
And that's the point at which the technological singularity is meant to happen.
Where we are no longer needed, really. We just kind of coexist.
It doesn't mean that. All it means is we cannot, with the tools we have at our disposal today, understand what will happen after that. But the scenario you painted now, where AI building upon its own improvements and escalating that at a faster and faster pace, it will become that. And so Ray Kurzweil's view of what the technological singularity is a point in time where the pace of change around us is happening so rapidly that unaugmented humans, so us as we sit now, will not be able to understand what's going on around us because the change is happening that rapidly. And that's 2045.
The irony there, say 2045. I mean, you started talking about 150 people tribes. Mm. Now, as an augmented human, with our phones right now,
we'll know everybody by then.
We could be part of multiple tribes. Mm. So I don't need to have one tribe, but I can be a part of a number of tribes. I can be, let's assume the 150 number for a while. So I can be in four tribes and be one of 450 people around me. Well, sorry, 600 people around me. Assume then the same sort of thing happens in the future. These augmented people are just, we're all into telepathying each other. We don't need to talk. We're just walking around, maybe enjoying life, maybe. Mm. But you're going to get these unaugmented humans, and they'll be a tribe of their own.
So it's one of the theories about what may
happen.
So
we go backwards.
Actually, yes. Well,
it's one of the theories that may happen. I mean, you've seen Ethereum.
Yes, the blockchain.
No, Elysium.
The movie Elysium.
Yeah.
The idea that we could effectively split humanity into two species is actually quite thoroughly explored by a lot of different scientists and sci-fi authors. Mm. So it could happen. Augmented humans will accelerate and improve exponentially, and the unaugmented humans will not be able to, and then eventually will become a separate species.
Well, what happens if you're caught between? I quite like the idea of being really, really, really cool.
When you lose connection, 45% upload. Blue screen. Hopefully Microsoft aren't doing the upload. It's fine.
That was Matt Damon in Elysium.
Yeah.
That's what happens in between.
He was the in-between guy.
Well, then I think I'm as cool as Matt then.
You're always as cool as Matt. He has a picture of you on his wall.
Yes. It's Matt wall.
You're weird. No, but that's, it's tough to comprehend.
It is. And I mean, this is the thing.
My brain's broken.
Yes. So for me, I mean, the way to kind of approach this and think about how to deal with this stuff going forward is just understand that as much as technology scares you, it is the path of humanity. This is the path we're on. And you have to embrace it. You have to embrace new technology and understand the benefit of it and suppress the fears. Because
but I see every single day as South Africans, we are terrified of fear of change. You know, we just don't want to change. We fight it in every single way.
But everybody does, yeah.
Like, I mean, to embrace the change, look, your ass are, and our listeners are probably a very small set of humans that are passionate about driving this trend and change and being part of it, right?
Yeah.
But we need to take everybody with us.
It's I mean,
there's a big psychological kind of impact.
We can't talk about universal basic income if not everybody has universal basic technology.
And I think that's part of the solution we've got to look at, right?
Yeah. I mean, the fear of change is a basic instinct for human beings. We're doing a lot of movie references here.
But awesome, does Sapien deal with this change factor? Is it just... It seems to me that it deals with it in the point of time and persuasion.
I think Homo Deus does. So the book Sapiens, he actually tries to answer a single question, which is, if you look at all of human history, does Homo sapiens have a direction? Is there a common theme throughout history?
Mm.
And he comes to a conclusion that there is.
Okay, got it.
And
so you don't need to read the book then?
You don't need to know what the conclusion is, because all we can do is speculate around that.
Well, no, the conclusion's the next book.
No,
right?
He's taking...
Oh, Homo Deus.
He's taking the past up till today, and his hypothesis is that there is a clear direction. I don't know if I should tell you. I mean, I feel like I'm spoiling the book. But everyone I've told to read it can't get through it. I don't know why.
What? No ways. I can't put it. I've got the audiobook. I every time I'm by myself, I've got my headset on.
Well, until I read it, you two are the most amazing humans I've met. Today.
Today.
Oh,
I feel special.
But you must know how many amazing people he meets.
No. It's a shitload. I see him a lot, so.
He is amazing.
But yeah. Look, no, thanks, Brett. I mean, it really is quite crazy to think further than the bounds of what we know now. I mean, to let our brain say, well, we know we can kind of get this way, but then to sort of like let it really go. Like, forget blue sky. We're like black hole singularity thinking.
Yeah, we've gone past the blue sky here. Right?
And the one thing that always gets me, like, so we made a lot of movie references and sci-fi versus futurology. Mm. Like, sci-fi is like, let's go wild. Let's literally, we don't need to be credible. we don't need to justify it to anybody. We can just go crazy. Let's just throw it out there. Futurology, however, needs to base itself in something that's actually happening.
You know, I don't necessarily agree with you.
Okay.
I'll tell you, the thing I absolutely love about sci-fi is, as a genre, it is specifically based on foundations of understood science. So if you
that's why they all come true.
Some of it. There's some crazy stuff out there. That's
Then it's fantasy.
Exactly.
And it switches into a new genre. Yeah. So and look, I mean, you know, so to me, a movie series like Back to the Future is more fantasy than sci-fi, because in science, time travel is still considered to be impossible. Yeah. Right.
So but it's been mathematically proven to be true. Possible, at least. It's time. Did you see that? There was a recent article that came out that said mathematicians have proven that time travel is mathematically possible.
I haven't seen that.
I will share it.
Cool.
Yeah, actually,
I'd be really awesome. Keen to read that.
That
sounds interesting.
I saw it and I was like, wow, that's well done, Facebook. You served me something worth reading. Now, if I could only make it go back in time and I can get the rest of the stuff
So the reason I haven't seen it is because I'm not on Facebook. That must be it.
Yeah. I'll WeChat it to you.
Awesome.
There we go. And we can share it.
Thanks, man.
No, but it is cool. And I think one of the things that gets me, though, is we always want to think about the dystopian or utopian view of the future from where we are at. What happens when 150 tribes of 150 people rise up against technology?
Well, I think the story of history shows basically that rising up against technology doesn't work. It's technology that's won war for thousands and thousands of years.
The nuclear bomb.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter how many spears or stones you throw.
Yes, exactly.
Because you can't actually hit the cloud.
Words sure can hurt you.
Yes.
Because it's a story. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah. This has been an amazing story.
Stones. I've got it.
Yeah, you got it.
Was that a 2001 reference? I'm trying to figure out what's going on here.
Hey, Dave. Okay. So... We're at the end of the hour.
Yeah.
Or close enough to it.
Okay.
But if it's relative, then maybe we're just starting.
I love it. As you did that, I was kind of thinking of 3D printing and stem cells again.
Mm.
Are stem cells like the organic form of 3D printing? Like, you're fascinated about nanobots, Brett. I'm fascinated about the stem cell stuff.
Well,
is there a combination to accelerate stem cells because of 3D
or clone
printing.
Them?
No, they're complementary technologies. So the liver story we were speaking about earlier, those there are companies making 3D printers that will actually print things in cells, but the basis is still stem cells, because you want your body to be able to accept whatever the.
So I'm not kind of fast-forwarding some of the things we spoke about actually in gamification, and that's virtual reality. But if you take virtual reality and you take sex, that means you can have all the sex you want in virtual reality and get your children printed.
Is it cheating then?
Kind of seems lazy. I mean, like,
do you want one last mind-blowing idea? Yeah. Like this will keep you awake tonight.
No, I don't. I need to sleep.
So. The story of virtual reality, we're on a path right now, and this is not my story, right? This is a story called the Ancestor Stimulation Theory by Nick Bostrom, and Elon Musk is a big fan of this. But the idea goes, would you agree that we are on a technology path where we will be able to recreate real experiences to a greater and greater degree of fidelity going forward? So virtual reality, the next generation
more and more real.
More and more real. And eventually at some point in the future,
becomes synthetic reality.
It becomes so real that your brain can't tell the difference between what's real and what's not. Do you think we'll get there?
That's wild.
Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger sure does.
No, I'm not. This is half the story. Do you think we'll get there?
Yes.
I think given the nature of progress,
even if it takes 1,000 years, we'll get there.
Are we there now? Is that your question?
So, what are the odds that we are
that
not already
happens tomorrow.
There?
Yeah.
No, what are the odds that we aren't already in a simulation?
Matrix.
And it turns out the odds are billions to one.
And we're just batteries.
Because 1,000 years on the timescale of the universe is nothing.
We just broke Brett Sinclair.
No, that broke me.
I'm done. I'm
broke me. No, you know why it broke me? Because when I was 6, I remember lying on the grass, and I remember it used to freak me out. I'd watch the sky, and I'd go... I feel like I'm in a dream. What happens if I'm actually in a dream?
Mm.
And I felt like, you know, if we talk about that, it kind of makes, and it's, you know, one of these childhood memories that still sits there, and I'm going, and I got so stressed about it, I thought, oh my God, I'm stuck in a dream. I'm never going to wake up.
The worst part of this is when you start looking at some of the foundational principles of quantum mechanics, one of the weird effects that happens is it seems that when we get to subatomic particle level, so this is leptons and muons and gluons and so on, the bits that make protons.
You're making shit up.
Yeah, I know. He's just made up a whole lot of words.
When it comes to the movements of those particles, there is evidence to suggest that some of those particles actually don't exist until we observe them.
Oh, yeah, I read about that.
So what this is exactly
does
how
a bear shit in the woods kind of idea. If a tree falls down and no one's there to hear it, doesn't make a noise.
But if you think about it, this is exactly how computer-generated VR worlds work.
Yeah.
Yes. You don't render everything. You only render what the viewer is looking at because it's computationally efficient.
So the Grunktonian being that is actually surveilling all of humanity at this point, do you think he gets a glitch on his screen when people are actually gathered like this and talking about the thing that is actually the thing?
And shuts us down.
And it's like, oh shit, they're onto us.
The best question I've had about this, I was chatting to a friend about this exact concept, and then the question was, if that's the case, what's the win state for this game? And it's like,
well, you know, I actually know what it is.
Maybe it's like Far Cry, where you just have a lot of space to keep running around indefinitely.
Just randomly shoot things. Yeah.
No, but don't you hit escape and then you get a menu bar?
Oh, yeah.
So surely the escape is like a bang on the head.
It's like a concussion, bang. I was about to say.
Ah, great. And I can see my score. I can see what you guys
maybe
are doing.
Car accidents aren't an accident. Maybe big storms in Cape Town aren't an accident.
Big storms in Cape Town.
And maybe the fact that Donald Trump and Jacob Zuma are presidents of countries is not an accident.
It's just a script. It's a story.
Yeah, did you ever play The Sims? It's the kid who's playing the game we're all in. It's like him dropping the T-Rex onto the city to watch it stomp through. Yeah.
It took us 52 minutes to get completely surreal, but...
You know what? I think it's actually a good point to finish, because next week's show is about the future of gaming.
Yeah.
And we've just finished the future of humanity, sadly.
Realize that the purpose of life is just to...
We're just someone's game.
We're just in a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bum, bum, bum. Game over.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to us. I think it's been absolutely fabulous. Brett, you have blown our minds.
Thank you, Brett. You are by far the cleverest Brett in this room.
Definitely.
Oh, that's very sweet of you guys.
And we're squaring ourselves here.
Oh.
Yes. We have to.
That's the only way. Brett squared.
But thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you very much. We look forward to having you again when Homo Deus is a thing we can discuss.
Actually, we should do that, right?
I need to read that book. I haven't got to.
Yes, me too.
All right. Okay. Excellent. Till then,
ladies and gentlemen, please follow us on at Futurology Show. And till next week, when life is not just a game, but we talk about gaming. Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.